29th through January 26th, 2025. Receive 10% off special order carpet and installation. Installation included in select markets with qualifying purchase. For licenses, see homedepot.com/license numbers.
Davis County Schools with a two-hour delay in their start for your Tuesday as these cold temperatures are factoring in. The wind chill value overnight tonight feeling like 25 degrees below zero. And for your Tuesday, even with the sunshine, the wind chill value making it feel like 25 degrees below zero with blustery winds. For your Wednesday afternoon, a 30% chance of snow. Now it's time for Just Start Talking on Thunder Country. Just Start Talking is a community service program from KIIC. And now with your host, Pat Powers, here's Just Start Talking.
With me now for my edition of Just Start Talking, I have an individual by the name of Laura Whitlock. And Laura, thank you so much for being with me here on KIIC.
I'm so happy to be here.
You're an Albion native from way back when. Go ahead and tell us a little bit about what you like to do when you grew up here, right here in Albion.
Well, I was always active in drama and in art. Those were my two favorite things to do, and I was an active member of the drama club in high school and the art club and speech, did a lot of speech tournaments, and yeah, pretty much things within the arts except music, because I have no musical ability whatsoever.
You don't have a bucket to carry the tune in, right?
Pretty much. I'm definitely one of those.
Okay, good deal. And so with costume design, they call it millinery, and you fell in love with that. Talk specifically about who helped you get into this and the sure. love, where the love came from.
My love of theater definitely came from being in drama in high school. And during the time that I was in high school, the first drama coach was Dan Walker, who was an amazing influence. And then later in high school, it was Matt Foster. And Matt was just doing plays with Matt. It was very formative. I think I had never really thought about the potential of actually working in theater before. And then after I graduated from high school, I went to Indian Hills for 2 years. And at that point, Jean Wolski was the, we always used to joke, she was the theater department because there were no other instructors. But Jean's kind of the first person, at that point I was majoring in art, and Jean was kind of the first person who looked at my love of theater and art and clothing and said, have you ever thought about going into costuming?
She put it all together for you.
She did. She put it all together, and she also, I graduated from UNI after Indian Hills.
Okay.
And she was actually the person who suggested that I take a look at UNI, too, because they have an excellent theater program. And so does the University of Iowa. But the University of Iowa has a lot of graduate students, so UNI has a lot more opportunities for undergrads to be more actively involved in, you know, costume design and other aspects of technical theater. So, so I picked UNI and I graduated from there.
This is really cool information. Okay, so you graced the doors on graduation from UNI, and then where did you go from there?
Well, literally the day after I graduated from UNI, I moved to San Diego, California. I was really lucky that my senior year of college, we had a number of guest artists. And one of them was a costume designer named Tina Hatainen. And Tina had worked a lot at the Old Globe. And when she saw what I loved and what I could do, she suggested that I apply for a job there for part of their summer season, being an assistant actually in the costume crafts and millinery department, and that's where I went. Like, graduated one day and flew to California the next.
And not a bad spot to land your feet on if you like warm weather, right?
No, I know people often ask me, why did you ever leave San Diego? I'm not sure if I have a solid answer for that.
Oh, my goodness. I'm talking with Laura Whitlock from my edition of Just Start Talking, and Laura graduated here from Albia, went to Indian Hills, and then on to UNI, so she's an Iowa gal through and through. And so from that roots of San Diego, you were involved with the Old Globe. Talk about that particular stage.
The Old Globe was, especially for that period of time, the Old Globe was just such an amazing place to make my foundation for my career, because that was the 80s. I'm going to date myself here. That was the late 80s. And there was just a tremendous amount of funding for theater at that time. So we did really lavish productions with elaborate costumes, and I got to do the types of projects that a lot of theaters, since they've had budget cuts in recent years, are just not able to do that kind of work anymore. So we made gorgeous hats, we made beautiful masks. I remember there was one project that we actually macrame'd 12 yards of trim because the costume designer couldn't find the Victorian trim that he wanted. So I sat shoulder to shoulder with a colleague for about 2 weeks and macrame'd yard after yard of trim. So it was just a really marvelous beginning to my career. And I met people there that I'm still friends with to this day.
That is great stuff to hear. So involvement of technology, you know, you said dated yourself with the late 80s, but how has technology evolved with this millinery as well? I mean, it was probably just hand-sewn lots of stuff. Has that changed? What's going on now?
You know, honestly, it has changed so very little. Sometimes I joke with some of my other milliner friends that, you know, you could plop us in 1890 and we'd know how to use everything they were using then, because it hasn't changed so much. Costume crafts, which is the other thing that I do besides millinery, there's a little more technology in that because people are using more laser cutting and 3D printing for things, but I just kind of decided that I'm just an artisanal, hands-on person, and I don't really use that kind of technology.
Okay.
At all.
Okay. Good.
Yeah.
Good. Good. That's great to hear. All right. So when you did pull up stakes there in San Diego, you ended up in the Windy City, I'm assuming. Is that correct?
Yeah, I did. I did a brief stint in Denver at what was then known as the Denver Center Theater, which was another really wonderful place to live and work. And then when I was in San Diego, I met a boy who was from Michigan, and we both decided that we wanted to be closer to our families, so we decided to come back to the Midwest. And, you know, taking a look at all the cities, he's in HVAC. So our big joke is, you know, if he could work in San Diego, he could work anywhere because they don't really need heating or cooling.
That's true.
But so it wasn't really, figuring out where Dave could work wasn't really an issue. But, you know, figuring out cities that had theaters that were big enough to have people who did what I did, it came down to Chicago versus Minneapolis. And we chose Chicago because there were more opportunities here.
Cool. All right. Speaking of being closer to family, just real quick, you still come back to Albia quite a few bit of the time. Talk about that real fast.
I come back to Albia every few weeks because my mom, Linda Whitlock, is still there. She's 86 years old, and she's still living in the house that I grew up in. So, yeah, I come back to Albia a lot.
That's great to hear, and it's good to know that you're able to visit your mother yet. That's super. I'm talking with Laura Whitlock. She is my guest here on Just Start Talking, and she's been involved with the millinery business and making hats and making costumes as well. And our next item that we want to chat about, you know, some of your works have been in films as well. As an individual who makes something and then you see it on the big screen, talk about how that makes you feel.
It's amazing. I'm not going to lie. It's just the most incredible feeling to see something, even if it's on screen for just a few seconds, to know that I made that and to see how that contributed to, you know, just the overall look of a production. I For some of my work in film and TV, there's a third thing that I do, which I always joke has the worst job title in the world because it's called Aging and Dying. It's where I'm given new clothing and I have to make it look worn, which is really fun. I mean, some of that it's a real challenge. Some of it's almost like CSI, especially if I have to deal with, like, you know, somebody who's been shot or, you know, something like that. But there was a movie that came out in 2021 called Candyman, which was kind of a sequel to there was a series of movies in the 90s called Candyman. And for this one, it's about an artist, and he wears these coveralls when he paints, and throughout the film, they get paintier and more messed up. And it was really exciting to see that film because every smear of paint and every drip on there, I put there. So that was really neat to see that.
Now, I am unfamiliar with credits. Did your name get rolled in the credits as it comes across by chance?
Yes, I am. A lot of the things that I work on for film and TV, my name is not on them because I'm either a part-time employee or a subcontractor.
Right.
But for that film in particular, when the credits roll, you'll see lead Ager Dyer, Laura Whitlock. And that was quite a thrill, too, to see that.
Well, absolutely. I mean, I haven't ever done that before, so that is really awesome. Earlier in our conversation, you did talk a little bit about the hats that you make in terms of that. Do you have custom-made orders for the Kentucky Derby when it comes in? Because that is a well-known event that is very, very popular for women to wear hats. Talk about that.
Yeah, so in addition to my work for theater and film and TV, I have a line of fashion hats that I make. Currently, I'm mostly doing custom order stuff. I used to be in a couple stores, but right now I'm mostly doing custom orders, and then sometimes I'll do special events. But I love making hats for the Kentucky Derby because it's really more extravagant and elaborate than any other event that we would wear hats for in this country anyway. You know, people really want to show off. They want to be over the top. That is just so much fun. I love making Derby hats. And I usually have a few people wearing my hats at the Derby every year. And I've also had people purchase hats for me to wear at Royal Ascot in England. And people have taken hats to racing events in Australia and Dubai, and it's fun. It's really, I always say that I should get to go where my hats go.
Hey, yeah. That makes all the sense.
That's a pretty exciting thing.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's fun. I love a Derby hat.
Well, talk about the materials that you use. What's the most common material that you use? And then on the same side, what's the most difficult to work with?
Oh, that's a really good question. And it depends a lot on the season. I make a lot of hats that are actually what we call cut-and-sew hats or dressmaker hats. So they're hats where I'll come up with an idea, and then people who sew will know what I'm talking about. I'll draft a pattern to cut out all the pieces and then sew it together. And for fall and winter, I also do quite a bit of blocking of felt. And that involves, I buy felt bodies from a millinery supply company. And then I have, over the years, I've collected dozens of hat blocks, which are wooden forms that are the shape that you want your hat to end up as. So you take the felt and you get it damp, and then you use a steamer. You get it all hot and steamy, and it gets really stretchy, and then you stretch it over these wooden forms. Sometimes you use some push pins to hold it in place, and sometimes you use some cords, and then the material sits on that block until it's completely dried and cooled, and when it comes off, it retains the shape of the block that it was made on.
Yep.
Yeah, so that's a lot of fun.
I'm chuckling to myself because about the only thing that I had to do with hats was Mom washed it in the washer, and then she put it on a pot. A cooking pot for it to dry out, you know.
You know what? And it's funny you had mentioned that because, yeah, so your mom blocked a hat because that's exactly what blocking is. And, you know, especially my work for theater and for the opera here, a lot of times I will need some kind of a weird shape, and even in all the blocks that I have, I don't have anything that's right. So yeah, I've blocked hats on flower pots and garbage can lids and wooden bowls and all kinds of things that were never intended to be a hat block, but sometimes you have to just you have to MacGyver something to get the shape that you want.
That's a great way to put it. That is a great way to put it. For my edition of Just Start Talking, I got Laura Whitlock. She's in Chicago right now, but she grew up right here in the KIIC listening area here in Albia, and talking about her profession that she does in terms of millinery and also with costume crafts. Go ahead and tell me what your sewing machine of choice. I'm sure you have a sewing machine there at your place.
I have a stable of sewing machines. I think probably the listeners who sew are going to chuckle about that too, because sometimes you just, you know, one machine won't do it all, and sometimes you need another one and another one and another one. I have a couple of industrial sewing machines. One is just industrial that does straight stitch and zigzag, and then I have another one that's called a walking foot machine, and that's a very heavy-duty machine that it feeds whatever you're sewing through using, well, it's kind of a complicated foot. But anyway, so you can sew very heavy fabric and canvas and heavy leather on that. And then I also have probably my favorite machine is my mother-in-law's 1950s Singer 401A. That machine just sews so beautifully.
Wow.
And I kind of keep that one aside. I don't sew heavy-duty stuff on that. I use that one for pretty sewing. But I also have a Bernina that's, you know, vintage Bernina, so it's still all metal, made in Switzerland. It's a real workhorse, too.
This is cool to hear. You know, as a person who barely puts a button on a shirt, why, this is interesting to hear. So I appreciate all the information you're giving about that. That is so cool. So go ahead and tell us about your position there at DePaul University there in Chicago.
At DePaul, I'm what's called an adjunct faculty member. In other words, I'm not full-time. I teach one or two sections of a class every year. I've been teaching them for 26 years, believe it or not. But I teach a quarter of millinery, so hat making. So I like to give my students all the basics, all the fundamentals of hat making. And then I teach another class of costume crafts, which is what I'll be teaching on Wednesday of this week. And we do mask making. We do mold making, so we make a flexible mold and pour up some cast plastic to make stage jewelry. And then we're also going to be doing leather work this quarter, which is really fun.
Yeah, that is interesting. So talk about your enrollment. I mean, we're talking a handful of kids, we're talking a dozen kids. What's your enrollment like?
I have 10, which is about as many as I can teach because of the space that I have and the equipment that I have. And it's also it's very intensive. So, there's a lot of guidance because I get a lot of students who have never worked with these types of materials before. So they get a lot of information. I always warn them at the beginning of the quarter that you're just going to be pelted with lots of information about a lot of stuff that it's wonderful. I had gone to a costume event with people from different theaters and people from film and TV in December. They had they call it the costume community Christmas party. And I saw a number of my students who graduated the program, and a couple of them told me that, I mean, I cried. You know, they told me that they still use information that they got from me all the time at work.
That's cool.
And that's really meaningful. That really touched me.
And it should. As an instructor, it should. Go ahead and tell me this for our listeners. What about their dreams, your students' dreams? Have they, you know, mentioned to you, hey, I want to do this when I get out of here? What are their paths that they want to take?
Well, you know, that is literally the first question I ask every quarter when I teach my class is, what are your end goals? And, you know, what can we do in my class to kind of help tailor this toward the things that you want to learn? I hear more and more from students that they want to work in film and television.
Good.
Which is great. It's, you know, it can be a challenge to find a job, but once you get a foot in the door, especially if you're a confident competent person who shows up and does a good job, that's often a good way to go, because if you work in theater, the pay tends to be pretty low. Like a lot of things that people call passion careers, because you're doing it for the love of it and not to make money. Frankly, there's a lot of theater jobs in Chicago where you would make more money working at McDonald's.
Oh my.
And so I do encourage my students to consider film and TV, because that's union work. I'm a member of my local. Our union is IATSE, which is the technicians union for both film and television, and also for larger scale theater. So for tours of Broadway shows and stuff, that's union work. And, you know, and that's a way to do what you love and earn a living wage and have health insurance and, have a little bit, sometimes voter job security, not necessarily, but yeah, so that's one thing that I encourage my students to consider, is a way to do what you love, but not take a vow of poverty to do it.
That's a good way to put it. I'm talking with Laura Whitlock, and she's a graduate of Albia here, and she's in Chicago where she makes hats in the millinery and costume crafts as well, and it's great to hear her talk about all of these phenomenal things. She graduated from here as Albia, like I said, and then went to Indian Hills, and then UNI, so she's an Iowa gal through and through. Talk about your love coming back to Albia. You were asked to do a quote-unquote workshop for the Victorian Stroll on that Saturday. It's was well attended, I'm assuming, right?
Yeah, but people who were there could tell you it was probably a little too well attended. We didn't have quite enough time for most people to complete their projects in class, and I didn't quite get around the room as much as I would have liked to answer questions. But I did a workshop where we used straw bases, which are technically a straw placemat, and we used them to make a base for either a kind of Victorian-inspired hat that you could wear for the stroll, or we could also scale it down and make it into more of a fascinator that you could wear for a wedding or a special event or a Kentucky Derby or, you know, just something fun. So we made the bases and shaped them. We put a wire in the edge. I had wonderful volunteers who sat at sewing machines and sewed all those wires in place, and then we decorated them with flowers and ribbons and tulle netting, and people just made beautiful pieces, and it was a lot of fun.
Good deal. So, like you said, you've accomplished this over a few decades. What's next for you? What do you see? Do you continue to do this, or are you looking at expanding your horizon, so to speak? Tell us about that.
That's a really good question. People ask me, are you going to retire? And I don't see any point in retiring from something that I love as much as I love this. Yeah, at this point, my plan is to continue doing what I'm doing, just keep making hats, keep making things for theater. One of the things that I've done a lot of in recent years is I work with a woman who owns a special events company, and she does just these lavish spectacles for various fundraising events and corporate events, where she has dancers and fire eaters and aerialists and all kinds of really, like I said, lavish entertainment. I've been working with her a lot, doing a lot of kind of fantasy headpieces, and that's been a lot of fun. So I see myself doing a lot more of that type of work, and I see myself continuing to make hats for the opera and, continuing to work in film and television.
Very, very cool. I've been talking with Laura Whitlock for my edition of Just Start Talking. And for our listeners, if you'd like to go back and listen to this all again, all you got to do is go to our website at www.kiicradio.com. Select the Listen Live tab up there at the top banner, and on the right side you'll be able to see this presentation of Just Start Talking and listen to it all over again, or just a little snippet of it. Laura, I appreciate you taking time out and giving us some insight into your life here on KIIC.
Oh, thank you very much. I really enjoyed chatting with you.
You dance like you're gonna love me tonight. We'll be right back.
is real. I can tell by the way you dance that you're gonna love me tonight. I can tell by the way you dance that you're gonna love me tonight.
Gravitate toward tennis balls when you're playing ball with them more than they do any other ball? Well, it's because the American Kennel Club says it's because of their shape, size, texture, and even the smell of tennis balls. They are perfectly designed for dogs. Dogs really can't see a lot of colors, but they can see yellow. And the size of the tennis ball is perfect for a dog's mouth. Yeah, to keep an eye on the ball and just have fun.
Blue skies smiling at me. Nothing but blue skies do I see. Blue birds singing a song. Nothing but blue skies from now on. I never saw the sun shining so bright. Never saw things going so right. Noticing the days hurrying by. When you're in love, my, how they fly by. Blue days, all of them gone. Nothing but blue skies from now on. Blue skies do I see. Blue days, all of them gone. Nothing but blue skies from now on. Blue skies, my.
On the Cyclone Sports Network. From Learfield, welcome to the Cyclone Coach's Corner, powered by Chevron Renewable Energy Group. Also brought to you by Hy-Vee, who proudly supports the Iowa State Cyclones. Hy-Vee, where there's a helpful smile in every aisle. Now, live, here's the voice of the Cyclones, John Walters.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to the Cyclone Coach's Corner, fueled by Chevron. It's fueling your game for a lower carbon tomorrow, making you a winner today. Glad you could join us today. We've got Coach Bill Fenley with us at the start of the show, and then T.J. Otzelberger will be along. Having trouble pronouncing his name lately. I think it's the cold weather. My mouth's frozen. Noah Wolf is our guest co-host today, and we appreciate him joining us, and we're glad you could join us as well. As the Cyclone women had their three-game winning streak snapped out at West Virginia yesterday, but back home to take on BYU on Wednesday night. And, Coach, I think the obvious thing is Emily Ryan was unable to play, and that's very unfortunate, especially when you're going into Morgantown, West Virginia, yeah, with the way they play.
Yeah, that probably, the timing of that wasn't the best. But West Virginia's a very good team. Mm-hmm. We knew that going in. Their pressure defense is very good. And, I thought, we turned the ball over, obviously, way too many times, but I think for the most part, the goal was not a lot of live ball turnovers, and we were okay there. We just had a moment really at the end of the first quarter. We missed some really good looks at the basket. They got a couple runouts on us, and then it was kind of uphill from there. But